Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. Busy week last week, huh?
We had a very busy couple of weeks. We have been on the road quite a bit. Last week was a lot of fun and good coffee.
That's right. We got to help America win the America's Cup.
That's right. Yeah, right. Always glad to help Larry and his crew.
That's right. Larry couldn't make the keynote at the Oracle Open World because of the America's Cup. But, you know, priorities. Billionaires have different priorities than the regular people.
But that gig was a lot of fun. For those of you who don't know, Lee and I and our producer Warren and my kid slash, what would you call her, handler?
Handler.
Katie Payton. We all joined 60,000 of our closest friends in San Francisco for Oracle Open World.
That's right, and broadcasting live from Moscone West.
And we talked to a lot of Oracle execs. And,
yes.
A lot of folks there exhibiting on the show floor, so that was a lot of fun. But not any more fun than what we're going to do here today, right?
Not at all.
This is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Lisa Smith with Andera Seminars. And we're going to visit with John Webb. And but first up, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce CEO and founder of EA Help. Please join me in welcoming to the program Mr. Brian Miles. How you doing, man?
I'm well. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. So EA Help, mission, purpose, what are you out there trying to
do? Yeah, and how big is your yacht?
I don't have a yacht. I have a car.
And car?
A family and a dog. That's about it.
Okay, we'll be able to work with you then.
Yeah, so EA Help got started in 2010. And we do virtual assistants for businesses and business leaders. And our goal is really just to serve leaders really well because they're out of breath. And a lot of them cannot find very productive people that can come alongside them in a meaningful way. And a lot of them really want it to be done in a virtual capacity.
So now, can you share some of the challenges of working with virtual staff as opposed to somebody you can see and make sure they're actually doing the work? Or do people even care anymore, as long as it gets done?
Yeah, it's more about it being produced well, you know, and them being represented well. The reality is a lot of global organizations already understand the benefit of a virtual workforce, and they're being productive and efficient. You know, a lot of conversations we have with larger companies, it starts with almost a deflated sense of like, hey, I don't think our workforce is very productive. And I'm nervous that half of a person's cost really equal non-productive things. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing organizations that will, under the label of it being, we're going green or we're going to reduce our carbon footprint, but the reality is they're creating a more productive workforce by asking them to work from home, you know, half their work week.
Now, you've always big on, I don't know how many businesses you've started and have failed and how you got here exactly, Lee, but you've always
it's
been...
It's a long and winding road.
But in all those cases, you were very big on getting some help and getting some help
yes,
early.
Yes, I'm a big believer in that.
But and that's really about the only way you could probably afford it early on, right? Was to work with virtual virtual to begin with?
Yes.
So what's your backstory? Brian, did you have a real job before all this?
Yeah, I did. Actually, of all things, I built churches. Around the United States. And
virtually or real churches?
Real ones. The company was based in Ohio, but we had consultants were essentially salespeople also. Then I managed a group of those guys, and my assistant actually worked for me for 7 years. She lived in Charlotte, and I lived in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that it worked.
Right.
And it worked well, and I thought, well, why can't other leaders just benefit from this? It's just really about creating good managed expectations and seeing things through and being less wrapped around the axle for, you know, her punching a clock. I wanted results.
Right, exactly. You didn't care if she was at the beach or at her office or at her house, right?
Yeah, and, you know, once you kind of agree to and you learn the other person, it really hits a good rhythm in terms of what needs to get done every day. Like my assistant this morning is already in my inbox managing things that right now while I'm on this, you know, the show.
So what compelled you to start your own business and leave what you were doing? That had to be kind of a big leap, right? Wasn't that a little scary?
It was. Both my wife and I, October 1st of 2010, walked into our employers, and my wife worked for McKesson, which is a very small company based in San Francisco. and I flew up to Ohio, and basically we both gave notice within an hour, and we walked away from amazing jobs.
Both of you?
Yeah, same day. and gave good notices, finished well. We wanted to do that. And then December 1st of 2010, we started our business. But part of the reason why I was compelled to do that was I read a book about Sam Walton, and I realized that he started Walmart in his late 30s. And I thought, I want to start a business before I'm Sam Walton's age. And for me, it seemed like I, if it wasn't now, it probably, the older I got, the more risk averse I'd get.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I need to do this. And then surprisingly, my wife wanted to as well. And so we said, great, let's do it. And most of everybody else, of our friends and family, they all thought we were really stupid. Now they're really big supporters.
So now, what was the biggest challenge? Like, I'm sure for your wife, when you're on your own as opposed to being part of a large organization like a McKesson,
yeah.
And there's a problem, you know, with the computer,
yeah.
That's now her problem, whereas yeah. Before there was a help desk.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've tried really hard as we've scaled. We've grown really fast. We've tried really hard to do what we say. And so we use an outsourced IT provider.
Mm-hmm.
They're based up in Boston called Everon. And so we've just tried to look for businesses that are like ours and that really kind of understand what we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, eventually there's certain roles you just have to bring in-house as you grow.
Right.
But I've been really pleased with the amount of other organizations out there that are like ours.
So now how did you build that kind of bullpen of like-minded partners?
It starts with what I valued, you know, and especially it starts with the people that want to be part of it and connect their heart to what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
We always are talking about our culture and how our culture connects to our mission, and we want to serve leaders really well. I mean, we're a rare organization that we're postured to serve others.
Mm-hmm.
We're not out there to serve ourselves, and we win when we serve others. And so that's going to naturally attract and repel certain people and partners in that process.
Uh-huh.
So how does it work, particularly on the very front end? So if we were interested in engaging your services, is there a consultation process? Or
like we need a radio host.
Yeah, a virtual radio host.
Well, I could provide you a really good assistant. I guess we've approached it the way we have in our past jobs. We have an integration period or an onboarding process that uh-huh. we walk them through that's pretty robust. We just don't match. We get deep into the details of that specific leader and then also matching them accordingly with the right virtual assistant.
So what's a typical pain a person has where they would reach out to you?
A lot of them, it's really simple stuff. You know, to be honest, it's just being able to be in five different places at one time. So sometimes it's travel. Oftentimes they get 150 to 200 emails a day. And they're falling down and being responsive to people.
But are they corporate people or are they
entrepreneurs?
Yeah. What does your typical customer look like?
I thought I knew that when I started my business.
Uh-huh.
I'm blown away by the breadth and the depth of the organizations that we come across. They're pastors, they're executive directors of nonprofits, they're CEOs of companies that are $150 million in revenue. Physicians, attorneys, consultants, authors, it's TV personalities. It's amazing the amount of people that actually leverage our services.
So now they might be using the service for their work and their personal?
Yeah.
Is there a blurred line?
It is on purpose.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a leader doesn't stop being a leader when they go home. And so what we found is that a productive leader that can be focused at home, that translates into what they do in their work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the services, does it go beyond administrative? Does it also include pick up my dry cleaning and order flowers for my wife?
Virtually.
Or? Yeah, virtually. And you know, what we find is, you know, we sometimes the big hurdle is, well, you're not local. You know, your assistant can't be local. Well, there's things called local runners that the virtual assistant can manage.
Hire.
Yeah, so really what happens is they really manage that person's life, and they take care of point A to point B. So
mm-hmm.
the issue of it being local is really a non-issue.
So what's like the craziest thing someone's had someone do?
Without naming names, I'm not going to go there. There's no way. There's crazy stuff. I mean, we see the craziest stuff and the craziest request. And, you know, oftentimes...
Like wait in line. The new iPhone's coming out. Wait in line to get me one.
Yeah, no, it's more in lines of things that border on ethical, unethical. And we quickly help them. We lose them as clients really quick.
But it's like what Holly's always wanted is another wife. Holly would love to have one more wife at our disposal.
But it could be like, look, we have something being delivered to our house. Like, this is a constant problem in our house.
Or the cable
Something's coming to our house. Both my wife and I work. Someone has to be there for a four-hour block to let them in to do whatever they got to do.
Yeah. You can pay a local runner to do that, even though your virtual assistant could be in Kansas City.
Right.
They can
find
schedule
the
that.
Local trustworthy firm. Mm-hmm. They can handle that, and then it just gets done.
Yeah. Another practical example is I don't like to read business magazines, but
so
I need
someone
to read
reads
the
them for you.
Yeah, and then they scan them. My assistant scans them and puts
highlights
them in my
the
inbox.
Good part.
Yeah, I tell her what I want to read, and so she's out there looking for topics or things that she knows I want to look at, and then I have a folder in my inbox that says read. And then I schedule time to read. And so I'm...
So can you, outsource being the CEO of EA Help?
Hopefully one day, yeah.
So how does the sales and marketing work? Are you out knocking on doors and describing what you do? Or is all the business coming in through referral? Or how does that piece work?
Well, in almost 3 years, we've yet to make a cold call. I mean, we have a tremendous marketing engine, and we've got dedicated salespeople and organization now that manage and connect with the relationships that
come. So it's all inbound?
Yeah.
People are just searching online for executive assistant, and you pop up somewhere in that mix? And
mm-hmm. We've got a really robust CRM, so how we are connecting people that say nice things about us in the market that believe in us and that we believe in them. We mm-hmm. give them the opportunity to kind of connect to us in social media and other realms. And then, what happens is large organizations, you get into one department in an organization and then, another department head's calling you. So there's a lot of referral-based work that we get to.
So what's next for you guys? Where are you going to be investing your energy in the coming months? Are you looking to expand and mm-hmm. be in more markets? Or?
Yeah, we're in a crazy growth season, it feels. We've gone from, zero employees, and then my wife and I, to we have 180 people on payroll in 2.5 years. And
so there's a virtual assistant that are out there helping other clients?
Yeah, and we own a separate organization that does virtual bookkeeping as well, which is an entirely different skill set. And so
bookkeeping
that's,
as opposed to being an assistant?
Correct, yeah. And so those plus our corporate team, we're just growing really quick. So the growth is just something we're wanting to manage. And, one of the things as a leader I try really hard to talk about is our ability to focus, because I think that we're in the infancy of our industry. Mm-hmm. And I really want to, be seen as a key leader or a key organization out there in the future. So we've got to focus and continue to produce results.
Now, how do you attract quality executive assistants?
Well, a lot of it started early on with social media. In mm-hmm. fact, social media has been an amazing place, for us to target great people. Our EAs are unlike a lot of other organizations. We target college-educated stay-at-home moms with past business experience. Mm-hmm. So we're not looking for just anybody that wants to work from home. We're looking for people that really...
So you vet them.
Oh, yeah.
They have to go through a little bit of a gauntlet.
Yeah. The statistic I heard from our HR director last month was we received over 200 resumes, and maybe 10 of those will get hired. Maybe. Mm-hmm. That they go through about a month-long vetting process. We test them. We make sure that we feel comfortable with them representing us. We do disc profiles on them. And we really know who they are as people.
Are they exclusive to you, or are they free agents?
Well, they are contractors of sort. And so mm-hmm. because of that, I can't mandate what they are, who they work with. But we give them enough work that oftentimes they're quite happy with us. And the other part of it, too, is that we are looking for what makes sense for them, too. A happy executive assistant generally equals a happy client.
Right.
So we spend a lot of time there versus, worried about what the client thinks. Well, we need to ask the EA what she thinks.
Now, do you assign a client with an EA?
Yeah, they're actually dedicated resource.
Like a dedicated.
Yeah.
So it's not – my relationship isn't with EA Help necessarily. It's with Mary.
Very much so, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you would be assigned a relationship manager that would oversee that process. But at the end of the day, your day in and day out interactions are with your assistant.
Mm-hmm.
We limit their involvement with other clients, so it's a really solid,
So I email them, I contact them.
They look and feel just like your organization. They're on your domain and working on your
applications. So I can give them my email address with my mm-hmm. company name?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to dive into this entrepreneurial journey of yours and your wife. So I think that's fascinating that you both just dropped the hammer on the same day. That's incredible to me. But
what were you thinking?
Well, I guess that's the overarching question, but I have other questions too. Like, did anything surprise you? Did you come out of that with a couple of just absolute solid do's and don'ts?
Yeah, weren't you like, you work for McKesson? Why don't I start this for a while and you jump in the 3 months or six
right.
months?
Well, I think my wife knows me well enough after over a decade of being married that I'm an all or nothing kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to do something, I'm going to really do it.
You don't dabble. You go all in.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this new breed of people we're seeing like that want to use us as assistants. And they have a full-time job and they're basically wanting to bridge over the next year into doing something. And honestly, while I think that's a great idea in theory, I don't see many having great success early on. And I really, I just, for me personally, it just didn't make sense. And, you know, the other part of it too is we had our own money to invest in our business. Mm-hmm. I wasn't taking outside capital. I wanted to make this happen and quick. Mm-hmm. And so we just poured ourselves into it. And fortunately, we've been blessed since.
So that's pearl number one, all in.
It's stone number one. We call it stones
of wisdom
here.
We call it stones of wisdom around here.
Yeah, that's, I like that. No, I'd say that that's one. I think one, another one is just believing in yourself, believing that what has been put in your heart can actually come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And then finding like-minded people that want to come alongside you in that process. I mean, that finding the right people is so critical. And we're still struggling with that. You know, we've got great people and some want to move on. Some get into it because they thought it'd be really cool, and then they find out it's really hard work.
Yeah, the work part kind of ruins it for people, right?
Yeah. You wouldn't believe the amount of people that want to work from home, but then they're like, oh, I really have to work.
Right. I don't like that part. Yeah. The home part I like. The work part, not so much.
Yeah. So we quickly help them find their future.
You free up their future?
Yeah.
That's what we call it here.
Yeah.
What an inspiring story. I can see you and your wife, since you have plenty of spare time, I'm sure, on the platform talking to aspiring entrepreneurs and couples in therapy, for that matter.
Yeah,
but
you know,
it's an inspiring story.
Thank you. You know, we're blessed. I mean, the reality is we're two different people. You know, she's very operationally driven, very much in the details. I am not that. I oversee kind of the sales and marketing and organization. I'm more the vision caster and organization, and we just play well together. You know, and we've learned to, much like in marriage, we've also learned to just trust in each other. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the default is trust. And our currency and our whole organization is trust. We're a virtual organization. If you don't do what you should be, I'm going to come and ask you. But we're going to default to trust, and just fill in the gap when you have a missed expectation, filling that gap with trust, I think it creates a really cool organization to be part of.
Now, when a person is trying this for the first time, what are their kind of in their head, their misconceptions or their fears?
Well, you know, a lot of them just come from more of a background where they're used to seeing somebody face to face,
right?
You know, and they think that they need to have this kind of interaction, but we help them realize, well, you can have the same thing just over Skype.
But is there a baby step like that you help them kind
of
make that?
Yeah, like for example, if you know, we help our leaders prioritize what they need to do. You,
right.
They'll come to us with a laundry list, and we'll say, okay, this is great. We'll do this over the course of the next 6 to 9 months, but let's get some early wins with what's most mission critical. Okay, so what of your life is the biggest wreck?
Right.
And so we just get into it, and we start cleaning it up with that assistant, that relationship manager, and making
sure. But what's
sure
a typical first, activity that they?
Well, a lot of our leaders travel, so we quickly take over their travel. A lot of them are CEOs, and they want to like do handwritten notes, or they want to, you know, they need to get on top of their schedule. It's a disaster, you know.
Like scheduling appointments,
yeah,
like meetings,
yeah,
or things
confirming
like
appointments. You know how impossible it is to land a plane when you need five people in one room,
right?
They take care of all that, you know, and then that leader can go and do something else that's more important to their
more
role.
Productive,
yeah. But that, I think that that's a big one, and I think the other one is just email management. I mean, that you communicate all the wrong things when you're non-responsive as a leader.
Right.
You might as well just not be a leader if you don't want to be responsive. And so a lot of our leaders feel this constant stress on their back about being non-responsive. You know, and we teach them that it's really delegation and workflow routing. And, you know, it's probably 10% of the emails that get in your inbox every day are the ones that you need to lead and answer.
But
process.
Somebody else can handle the other 90%.
Yeah.
So where can our listeners go to learn more?
Well, they can go to our organization website at eahelp.com. not to be confused with Electronic Arts. We're getting a few of those phone calls lately, but it's, especially with Madden.
With when
out.
Madden comes out, that's probably good for you, right?
Not really. We get a lot of interesting people calling us, but it's EAHelp.com.
Madden's not working on my PS2. Can you fix it?
Yeah, we're so over that. Yeah.
Well, what a pleasure to have you come down and visit with us this morning. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
So you're looking for clients, but you're also looking for good executive assistants, right?
Yeah, all over the United States. We hire exclusively in the United States. And so, yeah, we're always looking for amazing talent to join our team.
And the bookkeeping, the same thing? You're looking for bookkeepers as
Yeah,
well?
Qualified bookkeepers that want to work along nonprofits and for-profits.
And then do you get that? Does that come from, do you work with accounting firms? Is that your client for that?
No, small businesses that just are wrapped around the axle and don't understand how to do QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. You know, we have
it's QuickBook oriented.
Yeah, yeah, we leverage web technologies in that process. But
right.
The point is that if you're a leader and you can't figure out how to do a post an entry in QuickBooks, well, what are you doing that? Let right. somebody else help you do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. All right, and then EA Help, is that the kind of mothership?
It's part of it. It's part of a parent company that my wife and I own. Mm-hmm. But yeah, EA Help is the brand for our virtual executive assistants. And then our other organization is magbookkeeping.com.
MAG.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Fantastic. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit
I'd
with
love
our next
to.
Guest?
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio this morning, we have with us from Andera Seminars, Miss Lisa Smith. Hello there.
Hello.
So you've been sitting there nice and patiently. I saw you nod your head quite a bit. I couldn't tell if you were taking any notes. Did you learn something from that last segment?
I did, very much so. I really love the idea about the virtual assistants, and just thinking recently how I hired an assistant who works virtually from home, and he is actually in the same area just a few miles away, but he does all of his work virtually for me. So I see the value in that, and way to go on developing that business, because that is amazing.
Thank you.
So these seminars, what are you out teaching folks?
We are teaching folks a variety of things, but everything from customer service to team building and communications, all the way to very technical topics like payroll law, human resources, employment law, OSHA compliance, HIPAA compliance, all of these different topics, all wrapped up into the principles that professional improvisers use on stage every day to help employ those techniques in your organization.
So you think that improv for business is a good path for trainers?
I do think it's a very good path for trainers. I just think that there are a lot of trainers who don't utilize that path because maybe they don't know about it, or maybe it's just not something that's in their makeup and they don't feel comfortable enough with it. And this is where Andera Seminars comes in and really helps open the door to that line of thinking.
This is right in your wheelhouse, Lee. I mean, I improv based on being unprepared, but you
right,
improv on purpose.
I don't know about that. I'm on purpose unprepared.
Exactly.
Now, what's your biggest challenge when you go into a group and you say, hey, we're going to do an improv-based training seminar?
Well, if the group is unprepared for the improv training.
So that's better, right?
not always. If they're unprepared, sometimes I get those deer in the headlight looks like, really? You're going to make me get up and act? Or, you know,
right.
Yeah. So usually I try to have the discussion ahead of time with the management team to say, hey, listen, you know, we want to make sure everyone kind of knows what the approach is going to
right.
be and
right.
that they really are, you know, open to that.
And then, so is there any skill up? Person has to have to do this or
no really improv is just all about willingness. It's really all about the cornerstone of being willing to accept whatever comes your way and running with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there are discipline, structure, methodology to improving well, or
really the cornerstone of improv is something that one of the gentlemen who really brought modern improv into our world back in the early 80s was a man by the name of Mr. Keith Johnstone. And he came up with this theory of improv, or this technique called yes and. And the yes and basically means that whatever is given to you, you accept. Now, it doesn't mean that you agree with it necessarily. And it doesn't mean that you're always going to use it completely, especially in business. But what it does believe is that you're willing to hear it, you embrace it, you say yes to it. And then the and comes in with, and we're going to go with it, we're going to use it. And in business, the and might be, and we're going to modify it and turn it this way and twist it that way, or and we're going to put it here on the shelf and possibly refer back to it. On stage, it means, and we're definitely going to grab a hold of this and take it and move it forward. In business, it just means, and I hear you, and we're giving it consideration, and we appreciate your input. And so we have to take that cornerstone of improv and put that into business to show people that when an intelligent thought comes out of a human mind, it's worth consideration and acknowledgement. And the opposite of yes and being yes but or yeah no gets you nowhere in business. And that's what shuts down the creative process on a lot of teams and causes people to get frustrated and really just lose their steam.
We have a core team meeting this afternoon, and I am pledging now not to use not no, but hell no. And I'm going to try to move down the continuum toward yes and.
And what about that whole no but seminar you were trying to lead? That's going nowhere.
Yeah, whenever I teach in class, I usually have someone come up with me in the beginning, and then we have, you know, the attendees do it together. But we start out planning a party. And I say, okay, we're going to plan a party with yes and. And so we'll start out with usually with a luau. And I'll say, okay, so everything we say back and forth to each other, we'll give suggestions for the luau. And we'll say, yes, and we'll add to the party. Even if we don't agree with it, we'll find a way to work with it. So we'll start back and forth, and then I'll purposely try to throw something out that sounds really bizarre, right, and make them work with me, or I'll try to take something that they say and show that I disagree with it, but I'm working with it. And so someone always throws out the typical thing for a luau, which is let's roast a pig in the ground.
Right.
You know. And so then I take that advantage of saying, yes, and since we will have a lot of our Jewish friends present, perhaps we'll also have a roasted chicken or a nice roast beef. Showing that the roasted pig is not the problem, it's finding the workaround that we need to also add in. And so we just, you know, we make all of these things out there, and someone will say, let's have Mai Tais. And I'll say, yes, and since Susie's family doesn't drink alcohol, let's have Hawaiian punch with the fancy umbrellas. So we can show that just because someone throws out something that doesn't seem to accommodate the group, we don't have to automatically shut it down and call it a yeah, but, or a no way, you know. And so we do things like that, and then we turn it around and we plan a party with yeah, but, and we do like a Mexican fiesta. And then we show the opposite, that when you say yeah, but to everything that comes your way, you get absolutely nowhere, and the party never actually gets planned. So it really shows a nice contrast, and people start to laugh because they start to see the tendencies in their own organization, and they start looking at each other, and they start whispering, and they start saying, yeah, we know who that person is. But then they really start to identify that maybe they have those tendencies as well.
So clearly provides a much more pleasant environment. It's more fun to be around folks like that. But talk to me about real bottom line impact on a business. Does it really make an impact on the business?
Yeah, I really feel like it does. After over 20 years of working with businesses and really trying to implement these types of techniques, I hear the feedback that comes back weeks and months later. I have some clients who call me back every year to come and do annual training with them. And I will hear that, you know, for time periods on after, there will be the jokes that go around the organization about, yes, and, or, you know, they'll do the little funny jokes or other things that I implement throughout the training as well, the little callback, the key terms that I utilize that they can remember in their heads. And so those things are always coming back to them, and I hear that, and I know that they're working because they call me to come back on an annual basis to reiterate some of those things to their new employees that have come back through, and to do the refresher training as well.
Now, does this work better in certain departments over other departments? Like, is this good for sales? Is it better for HR?
You know, normally it's thought that sales really benefits creative teams, marketing, those types of folks are the ones that you really employ this with. What I've actually come to find out is that that's just a big old myth. And certainly those folks have the personality styles that they really embrace improv.
Right.
You know, they're that outgoing socializer, you know, usually. But those HR folks and those folks who are in that more cubicle mindset,
right,
they tend to at first be a little inhibited in the improv scene. But once you get them out there and you get them playing with you and you actually reinvigorate their sense of play that they haven't maybe brought out you know, since right. they were 8 years old. Once you reinvigorate that, then they actually tend to really benefit as well. And so whether they're in that problem-solving mode with maybe they're on the phone all day with customer service, or they're in the HR office battling with employees who are, you know, bickering, or whatever the circumstance may be, they can also see that utilizing yes and or various other techniques that we talk about in class really do start to come to the fore, and they benefit from that as well.
Now, do we want the accountant to know about improv?
Yes, we do.
We just don't want them improv-ing. We don't want them yes-anding on the right. challenge.
Yeah. No, we don't want them to do that with the numbers. But we do want everyone to be open-minded to the idea of, you know, of being imaginative with not numbers, but with any problem.
But interactions
with interactions, right? Mm-hmm. Because you know we know that the history of the stereotypical accountant is that very closed-minded, narrow, you know,
right.
kind of blinders on person. And so we want to open up the minds of everyone to having a little more playful attitude towards anything that they approach.
Right.
So I read a little bit about this principle of status in your work. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
Okay. Well, so status is something that, if you're familiar with the term turf wars in the corporate environment, you know, a lot of corporate organizations call me up and they say, we're battling with turf wars. This department thinks that they're over this department, and this, you know, we're having these battles back and forth over who is the leading, department or individual or managers and so forth. And so status basically on stage means that if someone takes the position of leadership over you, you give it to them, that you humbly bow out. So if we go on stage and someone sets themselves up to be the boss of the scene, then the other person may have had it in their mind that they were going to be the boss of the scene. But since this person jumped in and took that position, you bow out and you give them that status. So when you're in conflict resolution, or you're in negotiation, or you're maybe in a team building situation, you're in a creative process, someone is going to always step up to be the leader. A leader will emerge. Sometimes you have too many cooks in the kitchen and you have too many leaders trying to emerge, and that's where you have conflict. Well, if you have the sense of status, you will take a humble approach and you will back off just enough to let the other person have the status and to explore their ideas. And then once their ideas are explored and their status is given, they will feel validated and they will feel appreciated. And then they will be willing to slide back a little and let you emerge to give you the status you need to explore and emerge and be creative yourself. And then once you're doing that, you're sharing status back and forth. And improvisers do that all of the time on stage, and that's how you are able to share and be very equal on stage and move scenes forward. And so in the creative, structured, corporate environment that you're trying to open up, when you learn to share status, you get rid of a lot of the issues with turf wars, and you open up the idea that being humble is not a weakness. Being humble is actually a sign of strength. And I actually recently had a lady in class where I was teaching status who, she was in the customer service department. She dealt with a lot of customers who were constantly just in her face. And she said she always looked at having to be humble as backing down and losing the argument. But once I put it to her as sharing the status, it wasn't giving away her power. It was just letting someone else see her humility and giving them an opportunity to feel validated. And then she saw that that was actually a beneficial thing, and she felt like her organization could benefit from learning to share the status and not feeling like they were being backed into a corner and giving up and getting beaten down.
What a very mature way to approach a conversation or any exchange. I would think you would have to get more and more secure and, feel good about yourself in your own skin to pull that off. So I'm wondering, do you work better with people who are more mature, more enlightened in this regard, and do they make better students? Or is one of the greatest values of going through your process is that when you return them back to the organization, they're more mature in approaching these conversations differently?
You know, it's very interesting. Some of my best classes have been with the 20-something folks from backgrounds that you would never expect to have been taught anything in their entire life. Those have been some of the most fun, enlightening learning experiences where they have really felt like that they really jumped in and grasped the most of this information. And then I've gone into very strict corporate structures with folks who have big fancy degrees and they've been in the world forever and they should know better. They should know all of these things. And they, at times, have been the ones who were the hardest learners. So, you know, you really don't know who you're going to be dealing with when it comes to this level of mature learning. But really being able to break down the ideas and open the mind is really where it comes into. And part of what improv does in order to do that is being willing to get up in front of people and and open yourself up to this. It's sort of like being naked in front of people when you're up doing playing these improv games in a way, because this is something that most people aren't comfortable with.
You're very vulnerable when you're doing, and I got to believe if in the right environment, a six-figure salesperson might walk in your door, and if they'll embrace this, they might walk out a seven-figure salesperson.
Exactly. And so being able to break that person down a little bit and sort of disrobe them or disarm them, so to speak. That's a very humbling thing for them, and that sometimes will teach them just the amount of humility that they need to really be able to let that sink in.
Well, I'm humbled. How about you?
I am. I'm on board.
No, I mean, I wasn't just saying this. This really is right in your wheelhouse. You're a very big proponent of this, and I will tell everybody on air, you're very good at this, at giving the person who wants the leadership space for a little while.
Yeah, you notice how I'm letting you take the
exactly.
lead here.
As humbly, is being evidenced right here on no, I'll tell you, Lee is innately good at this, but you've also been to some formal training type stuff, right?
Not for improv, no.
But no?
I'm a big believer. Is there resources that a person that you could share with business people who might want to learn more about it? Like, I know hiring you is a great resource, but is there other information you can recommend?
If you just go out onto the internet, you can go to a website called Applied Improvisation. I don't have it in front of me. I think it's appliedimprovisation.com. It's an organization. It's free. You can just go out and search their website. Lots of great information about applying improv in business.
Right.
A lot of folks out there have written books that you can go out and look at. I have a really good friend who is a trainer, and he has written a book called Les McGehee Plays Well With Others. That's his name, Les McGehee. It's a wonderful book, and he talks a lot about corporate play. Kat Coppett, she's another trainer. Training to Imagine is her book, so that's a great resource as well. But really, Applied Improvisation, I think it's .com, or maybe it's .org. I don't know. Sorry, I don't have it in front of me. But it's a great resource for folks to go out and look at specifically for business.
And the heart of it is this yes and thinking, right?
It
doesn't shut things down. It opens things up. It makes things bigger. And if people would just incorporate that, that's a big win for everybody, right?
It really is, yeah.
How rewarding this work must be. You must really enjoy it and sleep well at night knowing that you're having a genuine impact on people.
It's an impact, and it's also something I tell people in class. I say, this is going to impact your business, your organization. But if you take the tools that I'm giving you today home with you. Use this on your teenager. Use this on your husband or your wife. This is going to impact your life. This is not just your business. Saying yes and in any situation that you deal with is going to change your life if this is not how you already think.
That's better than yes, dear.
It all works the same.
Particularly with the tone.
It's leading with yes. It's a good plan.
So how did you get on this path? What were you doing before this?
Well, when I was 18, I just kind of like the world of improv started to open up. And really improv in America started to open up in the really late 70s, early 80s, really coming on the mainstream. It was in Canada and it was in England. It was kind of starting to trickle down into the U.S. And so then in the mid-80s, I moved to Austin, Texas, and started to work with an organization called Comedy Sports. And they came out of an organization called Theater Sports in Canada, which is where basically Second City and some of those folks were opening up into. And so Comedy Sports was coming in out of those guys. And actually, Robin Williams performed with Comedy Sports when he first started getting started.
He does a little improv, doesn't he?
Oh, just a little. Yeah, he's not much into it, but yeah. And so a lot of folks out there, that have gone into the Groundlings and some of those other, that ones that you've heard of a lot, they all started out with organizations like Comedy Sports. Well, anyway, so that's who I started working with and just kind of went from there, moved to Europe with the Air Force. My husband was in the Air Force and was able to actually during Desert Storm when all that kind of, you know, blew up, a call went out needing some entertainers. And so since I was already in the improv mode, of course, I raised my hand and said, yes, and went out and signed up for that. And so
you entertained the troops.
For a brief time over there. So that was a good time, you know, and it was well received because, again, this type of improv was not on the scene largely yet. And so people were like, wow, this is really fun and cool. And now everyone has seen Whose Line It Is It Anyway. Everyone knows what all of this is about. And this is the type of improv that we did. And so anyway, it was a good time. And I did a little, you know, this and that around everywhere. But all the while still working in business and management and consulting and just kind of doing these things on the side. And then it dawned on me one day that when I was out training and I was consulting and teaching, I was taking the improv stuff and I was infiltrating it in, and I was teaching those things, and I put it together, and I thought, well, this is pretty cool. And then a few years down the road, I started hearing trainers talk about infiltrating their improv in, and it was actually a thing that people were teaching. It wasn't just something I thought I was doing. And then I heard it was called applied improvisation, and then I hooked up with this group of people that actually do it all over the country, and I realized I wasn't such a genius after all. That somebody else had actually thought of this, you know, it wasn't just me. But then I was really excited about it because I knew that this was something that was sweeping the world, actually, and I could actually be a part of this. And so, yeah, I just think it's really great.
So this organization that you're with, this is Andera. Do they do the booking? They book you, or you're out kind of doing your own sales and marketing as well? Or how does that piece work?
Andera Seminars is my company. And Andera is the company that I started. I do my own booking and gigging.
So you're chief cook and bottle washer. You're out there doing the entertaining. You're doing the sales and marketing. You got to visit with Brian.
I know, right? Yeah, there are three of us in Andera, and we develop content, we book, we train, we do curriculum, we just do all kinds of stuff. We call ourselves intertrainers. We entertain and we train, so we're intertrainers. And then I also do contract training with one of the major training companies in the United States, and so they keep me busy too on the side. But yeah, I just do all kinds of fun stuff, and so we're just out there, you know, just knocking them dead. But the improv side of things is one thing that I'll try to incorporate into everything I do because I think it's so important.
Well, that comes through in shining colors, I can assure you. It has been an absolute delight having you visit with us today.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun for me too. I appreciate it.
So where can our listeners reach out and learn more?
Come to my website, AnderaSeminars.com. It's spelled A-N-D-E-R-E, seminars.com. And then also you can come and follow us on Twitter. It's Lisa Smith at Andera Seminars is our Twitter account.
Outstanding. Hang with us a little bit while we visit with our last guest, will you?
Will do. Thank you.
All right, Lee, it's time for the headliner.
All right.
Everybody's been patient. We visited with the undercard. Here we are with A Day in the Life Photography. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. John Webb. How you doing, man?
Doing just fine. Good morning. Thank you for having me. What a great show you guys have had already.
You know, should we stop now?
Yeah. I was just saying, the door's right behind me, so this is I'm well positioned logistically.
Well, we tried to get you in here earlier, and you had some lame freeway accident experience.
Yeah, the lady behind me decided that my bumper did not look as good as it could, so she wanted to do a little rearranging on that, and she was quite successful at it. So,
well, I'm glad you're here and safe, and delighted to have a conversation with you. And I want to open it up by acknowledging that you and I know each other.
We do.
You have coached my daughter, Katie.
I have.
And you were willing to come to the studio anyway.
Anyway.
So congratulations on that. But the reason I mention it is I happen to know you too, like Brian over here. You had a real job.
I did.
In a large organization. So you made a leap as well. And I'm like, Lee, what were you thinking?
I think Brian and I were actually speaking about this. It's actually faith in your decision about really where you're being led. And probably what predicated a lot of that is I very much, as you know from our paths having crossed, I'm really very much of a coach and a teacher regardless of whatever I'm doing in my life. And when you're in an organization and you have people that are reporting to you and you've got people that are above you, going ahead and designating how those people are performing when you're the direct manager and indicating exactly where they're going to fall on that scale that really is predetermined, it became time for me to look at something else that we were totally in control of and that struck our heart. So we were the same. We simply made a decision, and it was based on faith, and Everybody thought we were probably nuts to do it, and we made the leap and went a little over a year. It was very fruitful for us. So we were blessed as well. We were very fortunate. But it was something that has been in my family forever. You know, my grandfather was at Eastman Kodak, you know, when Eastman Kodak was
really?
Still there. Yes. So I grew up with not only the paraphernalia of imaging around me, but, you know, the strong pull of some of the masters of the day and how photography was then when you were still looking at it as being an analog process.
So now how has it changed since the, you know, now nobody uses film anymore and they're all digital?
Yeah, that's mostly true. Film still exists, but obviously you can look and see what's happening with film sales and how it's done, and with digital coming along. It's really digital is a huge blessing and a huge curse.
Mm-hmm.
The big blessing is the wide latitude it gives you as a professional to be able to perform and work in areas without worrying about where the light is in one area and going into an extremely dark or completely differently lit area, and that is a huge boon. The immediacy of feedback about how you're performing or shooting, that's a boon. But the myth, and I blame some of this on the camera manufacturers, that digital suddenly made it easier, just isn't true. And the analogy that I'll use, I have a MacBook Pro, so does Stephen King, but I can't write like him. You know, and the same is true with this tool. So it's changed in that it's kind of given people the knowledge and the belief that, it's digital, so now anybody can do it.
Well, and also the preponderance of everybody has a camera now on their phone.
Yeah.
So therefore, everybody's a photographer, right?
Everybody's a photographer, you know. And I think maybe what sets that apart is you can look at organizations like the Professional Photographers of America. They probably have the largest single body of that that's trying to promote and maintain a certain standard of what professional photography should be.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 30,000 members, you've probably got about 2,000 that are bothered to be certified and get their CPP designation, which is Certified Professional Photographer. And we've done that, and it's difficult. I mean, your portfolio passes a review. That in of itself isn't fun. You know, it's a critique that you may not always like, and it's
right.
Uncomfortable. Then there's the exam. Then there's the maintaining of educational credit. So you're basically proving this is really your life and really your job. So there's very few of them out there. In the Atlanta area, the last time I checked, in about a 60-mile radius, there's 5 of us. You know, but look at the number of photographers in that same area. You know,
well, just everybody in this room probably is taking some pictures.
That's right. And it should. I mean, that's how it should be. It just reaches a different level to us when you're talking about your wedding or you're talking about your high school senior or something.
Now, is
like
that the primary place photography is being used now, is weddings?
Oh, no. I think probably if you had to designate what it is, I would call it, whether you want to say that it's professionally being done or not, it's really photojournalism. Look at what's going to happen in here today. I guarantee you somebody's going to take a picture probably of each of us,
Kevin.
Or as a group.
We're going to submit it for review to this panel.
See how good you are.
but just that and having that ability to be able to capture. So I would say probably photojournalism still drives the largest part of what's happening, regardless of how you look at that. People are whipping out their iPhones and, you know, their Droid-based phones and taking pictures and selfies and other things, and that's just going on just like this.
You think there were selfies that Eastman Kodak?
They probably wish they did, you know. So.
So do you get any crazy requests for different kinds of poses or different environments?
Not really with us. We are very much we're very much visual storytellers. So the people that are going to come to us and are going to bother to hire us are going to be the people that look at our imagery wherever it resides and they've seen it and it strikes a chord with them. And it's going to be the little small moments as well as the big moments and the things that are happening that are being kind of naturally captured throughout the day. It's not going to be a lot of really staged and led and posed stuff. The majority of my clients are they're going to be a little uncomfortable with that. Our clients tend to be the people that are a little more, you know, maybe a little more shepherds and sheep. You know, if you want to say it that way, that comes off as a little harsh. But you get my inclination is that those people are people that really are comfortable with us just capturing the day as it goes.
So a lot of candid shots, and you can take a great many. Now, that's one advantage of digital, right, is that you can take a whole bunch. And
yeah, you can. But the people I found that the people that are really good at this job and make a good living at it are the ones that aren't machine gunning in the industry. And the term for that is the person that, you know, gets a DSLR and then goes to a wedding and they've decided to shoot it, or, you know, Uncle Chuck's doing it because he's got a new camera, you know. And
so let him take 5,000 pictures.
Take 5,000 pictures.
As long as I get 20 good ones, it's a win, right?
That's right. And the problem is the post-processing and culling of that work that you did.
Yeah.
It would be like if, you know, we sat down in a typewriter and we banged it all out. Culling that out to where the story really should be. So you're the people that came along like I did when it was still film, they still kind of do the job to some degree the same way, but and still use the technology that'll allow them to do things a little bit differently.
So how many pictures would you take in a typical wedding?
You know, it kind of depends on what their coverage is. Our clients generally are the people that we're kind of with them all day.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, this past Saturday, you know, the coverage started with them, and you know, we're in for the hair and the makeup, and, you know, we're around the guy's home or hotel whenever they're getting ready. There may be some break in there, and then we're there at the venue and the ceremony, and usually there was something beforehand. So for a day like that, you're probably looking at maybe 1,800, 2,000 pictures. By the time that's called out, you're probably looking at about 600 or better plus somewhere in there that are going to be all edited and done, and that's going to be what is presented to the client, along mm-hmm. with other products and things that go in there.
And now you're in business with your wife.
I am, which you know as well. So.
Yes.
Still here. So it's a
you got to tell us about that dynamic, though, because that's got to have its unique challenges and advantages.
I think the advantage is that we recognize where our strength is with each other and the faith we have in each other, where that strength is. So for me, it's the fact that, in all honesty, when the camera's in my hand and we're doing the post-processing and we're doing kind of the creative editing side of it, I'm in charge. If any of that's not going on, I'm not in charge. So I'm not in charge here right now, as a matter of fact. So that we kind of – and we rest on that, and it works well for us because her mind works differently than mine when it comes to how we're handling some things financially or how we're doing things as far as how we present ourselves on our social media or how we handle – she's such an integral part of when we're meeting with our clients, and I can't tell you how – important she is to the process with the people that are there. You know, yeah, I still do predominantly most of the shooting. She's a wonderful shooter in and of herself, but you know, her strength is in how she holds not only us but a lot of times other couples together through a very stressful day.
Now, do you have any good funny wedding stories, any memorable?
I would almost go towards Brian's thing of I'm just not going to mention it, but I will say that there's been a few that have been really, really creative. Maybe the best G-rated was we had been hired to do a wedding at a real working farm, and you could tell after you arrived there not long and you opened a car door.
How do you capture that?
We knee deep, but just don't ask knee deep in what. But we actually were there, and the ceremony was going on, and as luck would have it, somebody actually did leave the pen and the gate open, and here up the aisle comes chickens and pigs and everything else. And I'm shooting away because,
right.
I mean, I'm kind
of
in
the zone.
It's
part of the story, right?
It's part of the story, but I got to tell you, I pretty much came close to losing it because this huge pig just wandered up next to the groom, and the groom looks down at him because, you know, it's all behind him. They don't know what's going on other than they hear a little noise. And he acted like it didn't even surprise him. And he just reached down and started petting his head. And I'm shooting away like, well, I guess it's his friendly pig. Or, you know, he knew the pig was going to be there. So you see a lot in this job. You do. You see a lot.
You got to be prepared with yes and.
That's right.
Right?
And they had a big luau after, right?
No, the pig, as far as I know, was still there. And otherwise, I may have said, well, let's do the pig and I would have tried to come up with something else, though. So
on the see back, how I tied that all together?
I saw that. I told you this improv stuff is right in his wheelhouse.
That's a callback, right?
These guys, they're very simpatico over there. So talk to me about the backside, the deliverable. It's I guess I can go and maybe look on the computer at all my pictures, but you probably present them in a really cool printed fashion.
Yeah, for us, our clients are still the people that are going to understand that we're delivering artwork. And mm-hmm. artwork is going to be delivered differently. There's going to be an album with everything that we do. And so that when we shoot that, they have the idea, they get the chance to see the presentation. They'll get links from us to see what it is. They'll get several things that'll be custom shows that are built. We respond to what the digital age is. A lot of times when the wedding's done, they'll get a note from us that says, you know, thanks so much for the wedding. We appreciate you guys having us here. We had a great time getting to know your family and friends. We thought you guys might enjoy this app that we designed for you. They downloaded it. Cool. It's on their phone. It's already got some of the things that are kind of our favorites in there. There'll be a link at the bottom of it that's to a mini online show that we're already hosting and up. And this is before anything ever even drops in their mailbox or they get anything. And then once those the images kind of show up, they're going to start getting a link, depending on where they are, with the album design process that really Tamara leads. Because only about 38% of my business or business is really local, you know, within the state. So we're all over the Southeast. You know, in January, you know, we were in the Caymans. So we're everywhere.
You're a bigger deal as soon as you cross the state line, right?
That's true.
You're an artist then.
Right.
Well, we'd like to think we are now, but there are people who know you from your past. We won't mention their name. Stone.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more? Website, app, whatever?
Website, you can reach out to www.adayinthelifephotography.net. There's links on there that jump and connect you to us and connect you to our Facebook page where we're really interactive on, and some stuff that will jump you to LinkedIn. And, you know, we would enjoy having a chance and an opportunity to meet anyone.
Well, Coach, it's been fun. I still have to call you Coach.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, and we appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.